True Crimers, welcome to Break the Case. I'm your host. I'm Jen Coffendaffer. Thank you so much for being here today. We are going to stay tight on Nancy Guthrie. I am still abroad, but I will be back on Tuesday, and we're going to get into a definite steady schedule so you all can follow it. But I appreciate all of you willing to work with this crazy schedule, and it's so great to see all of you. I've missed y'all, actually. So, Nancy, there's a lot been going on. I've been tweeting about it, but I wanted to come forward and talk to y'all about it. I don't know if you guys ever watch Inside Edition, Extra, obviously News Nation, but we've really been blowing it up, and I've managed to get on or have been asked to commentate about the Nancy Guthrie case on those programs recently. And listen, this is where we're at. There's a couple of things I want to point out just in case you don't know. First of all, number one, talking about Nancy Guthrie, 84 years old, went missing from her home, taken at gunpoint. I say gunpoint because we know Porch Guy had a gun on him right in the middle of his waistline. And in any event, she was taken, abducted. That is not for dispute. I know some people want to say, not really abducted. This was staged. I'm just going to tell you what I firmly believe, and not only what I believe, but what the FBI has said. So we'll get to that in a second. But I want to talk about a new development regarding Sheriff Nanos. And it's important to bring him up because at the end of the day, he is in charge of the investigation. That is just a fact when it comes to the ransom side of it and the digital forensic evidence side of it. The FBI is taking more of the lead, but overall, in terms of adjudication of this case, it's handled by Sheriff Nanos. And there were several ways based on what happened in this case, and then, of course, what came out about his priors. In other words, that he was involved in police brutality, 8 different investigations into him when he was with another police department before he joined Pima County. This was literally decades ago. And he lied on his application to become a part of Pima County, of course, now has been sheriff and was elected. And so there were a lot of efforts to get him removed. We talked about it a lot at the time. There were basically 3 avenues to try to get him removed. The first 2 avenues failed. The last one that existed was the avenue that involved a recall vote. Now, a recall vote required literally thousands. I think I figured up they would have to get 1,200 signatures every day leading up to the recall deadline. The deadline came and went, and I just wanted to let y'all know that there's no other avenue for Sheriff Nanos to be removed. I just think it's important to know because this was something that was sort of dangling out there. In other words, is this going to happen? Is it not going to happen? Well, it's not going to happen. So for everybody who would like him to be removed and would like something to happen in that regard, it's not going to happen. I just think it's really important for y'all to know. And he's not going to step down. I can assure you of that. That is not in his nature. He is happy to be in charge of this investigation. And it's a national investigation. And he is all too happy to be at the helm of this investigation. So unless it's discovered that she was taken across state lines, which more and more, I think, or international lines, more and more, I don't think that's going to be the case, most likely, then that's not going to happen. So that's kind of a big thing that happened recently. Again, I tweeted about it. I tried to do a couple shorts on it, but I wanted to come and actually go live with you all and give you the latest and greatest, meaning the greatest and best news that we know out there on this case. Secondarily, I wanted to discuss something that's kind of been thrown around, and that is this case is cold. We've seen it for really months now, that the case is cold, that there's, nothing going on the case. I just wanted to explain, and I know I've touched on this before, but a cold case by definition means all leads have been exhausted. There are no interviews to be done. There's no forensic analysis to be done. There's no video to look at. There is no information whatsoever. It's cold, meaning there is nothing left to do on it. And what does the FBI do when that happens? Well, one of two things. So as a case agent, if a case goes cold and I'm busy on other matters and I don't want to have it work against me, and let me explain how that works. So as an agent, when you are assigned to a particular case and you're an active agent on that case, you have to be producing. You have to be interviewing, getting subpoenas, working toward convictions if that's where the case is going, or you close it. If it ends up being that there's nothing left to do on the case, you close it or you put it in what we call pending inactive. Pending inactive means it's a completely inactive investigation. It's still pending, meaning the case agent doesn't want to completely close it down and then have to start all over again. Because as I've explained before, you can't just open a case in the FBI. You have to predicate it. You have to do an opening, what we call an EC, an electric communication, that outlines what the case is about, what violations federally have been committed. In this one, it would be kidnapping. And again, I've explained that under sub B of 18 USC 1201, that says that if somebody has been missing more than 24 hours, it can be presumed that they've crossed state lines, and that's how the Bureau can get involved. And the other thing is, if ever electronic communications are used to facilitate the kidnapping, like in this case, if the two ransom notes are real, then the FBI can actually take over the case and be the lead and have the case adjudicated with federal authorities. There's a lot of ifs there, right? So right now, the adjudication of this case, again, will be with Sheriff Nanos and Pima County and the Pima County prosecutors, if and when an individual is found. So I just bring up this word cold because, again, that means zero leads, zero digital electronics to follow up on, zero Bitcoin, zero investigation, zero tips that have come in that you're following up on, zero interviews to do, zero video to look at, all that. Can we all see that that is just baloney? And it's just not true. There is so much still going on. Remember the words that we have been told, 10,000, something like that, leads, thousands of leads. Just imagine how difficult it is to do 10,000 to-dos. And this, months ago, it wasn't anymore all of Pima County. And a huge influx. Cash Patel said 100 agents and all of his the analysts working on it. That disappeared months ago. It went to the Safe Streets Violent Crime Squad in Phoenix. Those squads, at least if we're to believe the reporting of, I believe it was CBS, 24 people on that squad. And then within the 24 people, they're not all going to be working on Nancy Guthrie. Maybe a dozen of those people are going to work on Nancy Guthrie. Maybe. The rest have cases that are ongoing that they have to work. So again, back to this understanding how cases work. When it is opened, you have to be producing on it. If not, you close it, or else it's working against you. I hope that makes sense to everybody. It's like no matter what avenue of work you do, if you have an account, say in sales, and they know they're defunct and they're no longer buying anything, you don't keep them as an open account. You're not going to keep visiting them. You're not going to keep doing anything. And that's how it is with the FBI. You are judged individually on your work effort. What are you doing? Do you have informants? Do you have subpoenas? Are you getting the case down the road for prosecution? And in this case, down the road for understanding who committed this crime. So there's that. I wanted to talk on that this is not cold. It's far from cold. There's a big difference, though, obviously, between whether a case is cold or hot or whether somebody has, in other words, an FBI agent, that task force has their sights on a particular suspect. That, I believe, is likely true. Now, remember, we've heard, I mean, now it's just, folks, I know you're hearing from an FBI agent who said, oh, it's there's an imminent, that was weeks ago, an imminent arrest coming up, a porch guy. And then another one saying it was cold. I know it has to be so confusing for you. But these agents are working from very different, all of us work from very different backgrounds. If you ever watch Tony Bruschi, I love Tony. I just love that show. That whole feel for that show is so awesome. And Robin Dreek recently became his partner on the YouTube side, for sure. I think YouTube and podcasting. Tony does a lot. I didn't know he did ghost stories too, which I find fascinating that he's doing that. But nevertheless, I go on every Friday. We call it Fun Friday. It's really fun. It's one of my favorite shows to do. And Robin Dreek is on there. Now, Robin Dreek was a supervisor in the counterintelligence unit. Just to tell you what his background was in a nutshell, was he was literally developing spies within the Russian program. That's what he did. So if you asked me, Jen, can you tell me about spy development within the FBI? I would say, let's go talk to Robin Dreek, because he spent a career working foreign counterintelligence. He was in the military. Beyond that, he worked foreign counterintelligence, specifically in the behavioral analysis unit regarding how to cultivate spies. That is his bailiwick. And a lot of people may not understand that about 90% of agents have a specialty. They're not all plumbers. They're not all electricians. They're not all hairstylists. They have a very specific area that they've worked typically through their whole career, because most agents are in headquarters offices, meaning those offices like Houston, Dallas, New York, Philly, headquarters, they have a specific branch that you are going to work at, and they want you to get good. They do not want you jumping around. They want you to get great in it. And the people working these crimes want to get great in it. Robin Dreek wanted to be great at what he did, and he was. So that's what he did. And it's fascinating because, of course, a lot of what he did interplays in, I think, from a behavioral standpoint, into the crimes that we look at and that we cover. From a behavioral standpoint, you know, the bad guy, why did he do it? Why were these people chosen? Why, what must they have been thinking? He's also great with numbers and analytics, because that is at a key and a crux of their job. That was not my job. My job was, I worked in what we call resident agencies, and it's a very small amount of people total in the FBI, FBI agents that work in resident agencies. When you are in a resident agency, you work everything that happens in your area. Very different from headquarters agents. So we have a kidnapping come in, we work it. We have a bank robbery come in, we work it. We have a drug case come in, we work it. We have a spy case come in, we work it. So we become a little bit of a jack of all trades. Now, for 6 years in the RA, I did work only gangs. That was where I worked. I was embedded with the locals, worked the streets, and took 12 different cases to the federal level, and one where we indicted 48 Crip gang members. That was a huge case with informants, and we took down this whole group. So what I'm trying to sort of explain here is why you're seeing one FBI agent say one thing, one FBI agent say another. You really, really, if you can, and I know it's hard to, but understand their background as best you can And I know sometimes the bios seem confusing because they want to throw everything there is on the bios. I know that there isn't anybody commentating right now except me that works expert witness work right now. And that's fine. I mean, a lot of them right now are really just doing this, right? They're commentating. They're not working anymore. They're doing podcasts and things like that. So when their career stopped, they really stopped doing what they're doing. Not all of them, but many of them. Some of them are consulting, like in everything from movies to, you know, about crime from back in their day. But I think it's important. And I think that sometimes why I might have a different point of view is because my point of view is also as an expert witness. I am constantly working these homicide cases still. I have six of them on the books right now. And when you're still working those cases and seeing the different modus operandi, understanding the detail after detail in thousands of documents and then putting that all together and testifying about what you've discovered and how that relates to whether a crime was committed, whether a crime wasn't committed, whether there was a justified homicide, not justified, you're in the middle of it. Now, I got to be honest, it's a lot. And I've been rethinking a lot of things as I've been on this trip. But my big point here is just to explain the huge differences, not only in our backgrounds, but what we are doing now. And that is going to give you the lens as to why one might say one thing and one might say another thing. Also, each of us are going to have our different views and so forth on things like informants. Obviously, many of us still have a lot of people in the FBI that we talk to. Some of us even have relatives. Some of us have our best friends that are still in the FBI. Some of us have our first secretaries that were in the FBI. Some of us can make a call and, depending on who's in charge of that office, get straight to that case agent. But we all have different viewpoints on any information that is gleaned from those connections, whether we even talk about them, whether we talk about having sources or inside connections. And you all know my view on this. I'm not going to say anything. Even if I know something, I'm not saying it. Do I ever subtly maybe do a sprinkle? I may subtly do a sprinkle that does nothing to hurt the case and does nothing to cough up who gave me that information, right? But that's my view on it. I just don't think it's right on an active investigation, if I were to know something, to say anything that would be a big deal. So that's what you're getting here. I just wanted you, I know a lot of people have been DMing me. People are asking me, Jen, why do we have all these different viewpoints? Well, that's why. So look at what they really did in the FBI. Hopefully their bios aren't general. Hopefully, you know, their bios or their CVs very specifically show what they did. I mean, I post my CV online. Everybody can see what I do. I mean, I'm on Juris Pro. I am absolutely an open book. There's no confusion. I testify all the time. So you can see what I did, who I did it with, what kind of crimes I had, so on. So I'm an open book. I know it might be harder to really get down to what other people did in terms of, you know, their experiences with the Bureau, but everybody I very much respect. So I want to say that I respect everybody's career and what they've done. But you'll notice when Robin and I are on there, if we're talking about a behavioral analysis unit or anything to do with obviously spy work, any kinds of cases like that, I 100% defer to him. How in the world can I take the one or two or three or four sprinkled cases that I've had and ever compare it to 20 years that Robin Dreeke has had in the foreign counterintelligence area. And now I did do counterproliferation with foreign counterintelligence in weapons of mass destruction regarding nuclear counterproliferation. That's different from what he did too. But my point is, I'm deferring to him, and he defers to me when it comes to criminal stuff, you know, grand juries and how it all works, because that isn't what he did. He helped out, and you're always going to help other squads out when big things happen. Like, I don't know on his squad if he ever did a drop, for example, in their world where you're actually paying a spy and you have to do a drop. So you need a lot of surveillance around that. We call on each other. So sometimes you do cross paths. That's for sure. All the different squads work together, especially on big cases like Nancy Guthrie, especially at the beginning. I just wanted to explain all of this. So take a look at the different views, why they say they believe what they believe. And then I've always said this, you all are the juries, right? You all are the people that would be on a jury. You all are the people that are amazing at analyzing and looking at what different people say and making decisions for yourself. And that is what this channel is about. I've met so many people. I couldn't believe it on this trip. It's been crazy. And like I said, I think I might have one on that provided a amazing experience. And I know many of you don't like this case. I don't like this case. The Pigpen case, the Karen Reed case, he kept me after for like 30 minutes after my flight. But I had a long layover, talking to me about his metamorphosis from being a strong, he was a flight attendant, a strong, committed FKR, studied everything about the case. I got to tell you, he was telling me things about the case. I'm like, oh yeah, I remember that. Oh yeah. I mean, he had it memorized, where mine, I have to go back through my archives and I have to look everything to it. That is the only case he was ever really into. He was amazing. And his metamorphosis from being FKR to absolutely believing Karen Reed killed John O'Keefe. Now, that's neither here nor there. I know it upsets a lot of people in chat and everything, but I just want to say that I thought it would be interesting for me to interview him so he could talk about that. And then, of course, I mean, how he was convinced was watching the second trial. And he said, oh my God, he hit him because of the going in reverse and all of that information that lined up to when he fell and was on the ground and his cell phone went down. So he strictly looked at everything from analytical view, from the digital forensics. But I only bring that up to say that I really am always impressed at chat. I look at all of these. Even now I'm going to go, even though I haven't been watching them, I am going to go back up and look. But I just wanted to say that I wanted to explain that. So remember I said there's three things I wanted to kind of break down today. So I wanted to let everybody know about Nanos. He's not going anywhere. Everybody to know about the new, you know, FBI claim that, or agent that said, that's retired, that said it's cold. I don't agree with that at all. And why, my reasons why I don't agree. And then I also wanted to discuss one of the most important things, and that is what Brianna Whitley said. And I want to go over, so Brianna Whitley, again, worked at one of the news stations. She's personally seen the note, and it's really, and now she's with Crime Junkies. I really like Brianna. I like her style. She kind of, you know, reminds me of, I just like the enthusiasm and, you know, that she's on it. But I wanted to talk about, because she goes into a lot of detail on that first note. She had previously gone into a lot of detail on the second note, but now we're seeing the detail on the first note. I want to talk about a couple of things that jumped off the pages at me, okay? The first one was, hello, Savannah. That's a quote, everyone. Hello, Savannah. Now, remember the second one. I am still convinced that the second one is AI. I'm really convinced. I know they're related because they have the same IP address, but I truly believe that they are related. I truly believe that the first two are not only related, but were written, that they're authentic, that they were written by the perpetrator or ERS. I think it's ERS involved into this. Okay. Hello, Savannah. The last time I saw a note with these details that were so personal like that were with Patsy Ramsey. And I know many of you may not like my view on that either, but Patsy Ramsey wrote that note. And I've done a show with a prolific profiler, Greg McCrary, who absolutely, he and John Douglas wrote the book on criminal profiling. They literally wrote the book. They are so well regarded. He is one of my mentors. We work at the same place, although he's really almost fully retired. He still mentors and things like that. But he is prolific. Greg McCrary, he's been on my show 3 or 4 times. He really won't go on shows anymore. He just does it for me, I think, because we have a close relationship. And he's always been great when I've asked him to come on. But we both agree very strongly that that was an inside job. I know everything you guys are going to say. I know what's going on. I'm very well aware of everything. That will always be my view. It cannot change unless something huge happens. So, yes, Frostflower, I agree with you. He knows that it is so minuscule and degraded and not going to work. And he hangs his hat on all that. But anyway, I've totally digressed. But I'm just saying that that is the personal like this. Oh, I wanted to say too, don't forget that Patsy Ramsey and John Ramsey were indicted. Does everybody know that? Has everybody read that indictment? You should read that indictment. It's quite eye-opening. And then remember that personally, the DA at the time basically would not follow through on the indictment of the grand jury. Basically said, in your face, we're not arresting. We're just not going forward with your indictment. But nevertheless, I've totally digressed. That's another show. And I did my first show on this subject, on JonBenet Ramsey and 2 other cases as well with McCrary. And McCrary and I are on the same page, by the way. But nevertheless, I'm digressing. I want to stay on Nancy Guthrie. Hello, Savannah. That personalness is really something, everyone. It really, 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 really is. And that I have your mom, again, it's just so personal. So personal. I'm holding her for a max of only 7 days. This very, very specific. It's personal. It's specific. It is organized. It was within the proper time frame. You know, everybody likes to say, oh, the ransom note didn't come in time. Heck yes. Heck yes, it came in time. And by the way, for those of you who might disagree with me, I love disagreement. Especially respectful disagreement and conversation. Because I mean, I can think of one instance right off the top of my head where with Daniel with Drunk Turkey Show that we had a lot of conversations about a particular point. And actually, well, I came to very much look at that point he tried to make and then kind of circled back. And that was to do with this picture. I think this picture is two different days. And I base that mostly on the darkness at night. I base it on the obviously not having his gun and his backpack. And then also this plant situation over here, it's in a different situation, you guys. It's not orientated as it was on the 31st or on the morning of the 1st of February. So anyway, but again, I'm digressing. I want to get to this note. They got that note with it. I mean, the two local stations within about 24 hours. TMZ got it later, 12 hours later after that. That is very much in keeping with what you would expect. Why? Because the fact that they decided to go to the local stations instead of reaching out directly, well, look at what happened with Mr. Colella, David Colella, who's already been charged. He's already pled guilty. He's got sentencing in September, but he's worked out a plea deal to get basically a slap on the hands, which always happens in these kinds of federal cases where there's no, violence, first-time federal offense, blah, blah, blah. We'll see if he makes it through, the time frame before September without screwing up again, because he already did meth when he was out on probation. Nevertheless, when you're looking at this case, it was well within what you would expect, and it went to these authorities, or not authorities, to these stations because they did not want to get caught. They did not want to get traced. That's why. And it's worked. Now, this is what I think. I just wonder. I just wonder. I wonder if whoever did this really knew that when there are these inboxes with whatever it might be, a TV station, a radio station, whatever it might be. If they somehow have a relative that works at a station, some station, have in the past themselves, if they knew that going in this way would be untraceable, the FBI cannot trace this, you guys. I'm just telling you, for me, I would not have known that. Would you all? Would you all have known that if I sent a ransom note or some illegal type communication that I didn't want to have traced, would you know that it wouldn't be traced if you sent it into one of these inboxes? Again, whatever it is, a restaurant, send your comments, a news station. Would you have known that? As I can tell you, I didn't know. I hadn't heard of that not being traced because it goes to these inboxes with TMZ. I mean, they have three avenues, guys. Two different radios, or sorry, two different news stations and TMZ, and they still can't find it. Who knows that? Who knows that that is that difficult to trace everyone? I find that fascinating part of it. I really do. And again, I know you know that I believe those first two notes are real. That were the FBI has said this, they got really pissed off when who was it, guys? Now I'll never be able to trust them again. I mean, I might be able to get back to trusting them. I don't think it's the news. I truly believe it's, in other words, the reporters. I truly believe it's they have bad sources. Gosh, I can't even remember who did that. I don't normally follow them anyway, but nevertheless, they were the ones that said the notes were all fake and junk and the FBI, right? And the FBI came back and said, No. In fact, I'm going to read you what the FBI said, just to be specific. The FBI said, the FBI and its task force partners have received several ransom notes over the course of the investigation. Some have been deemed to be extortion attempts without legitimacy. Okay, those I think are the TMZ 12 we talk about a lot, because there's 12 of them. Other ransom demands may potentially, I know it's not as Cheryl McCollum would say, this isn't getting married, right? In other words, it's not strong, but this is typical bureauees may potentially be legitimate and are still being investigated as such. They are being investigated as being legitimate, everyone. They know the others aren't, but look at this. All right. The FBI has and will continue to offer the assistance where possible. So again, they're saying we're not the lead. This isn't us, but we're going to keep offering this. And by the way, I want to very much thank Mega for this membership that you have had now for a month and for your kind words. And then I also want to put up my friend Kelly and thank her very much. Thank you always for your support, Kelly. You're always here and I so appreciate you. And I haven't forgotten. I got to get back home. And then they also say, and this is what is mind-boggling to me, everyone. Please look at who you are watching on this case. The FBI has said what this case is. This is not Sheriff Nanos saying it, because I know Sheriff Nanos has been saying this for a long time, but nobody wants to believe him, and I understand why. But the FBI, everybody was begging for it. If the FBI would just talk, if the FBI would just talk. Well, they did. Quote, this case continues to be investigated as a kidnapping for ransom. Guys, this is not a mystery in terms of what happened, in terms of the kind of case. Look at Porch Guy. He's got that backpack full. This isn't a thief. This isn't a home invasion. This is a kidnapper. These kidnap notes ring true. He snatched her for money. He addressed it to Savannah. He says, hello, Savannah. And then later says Savannah, because Savannah has the bucks. This is not a complicated case. It isn't when it comes to nuts and bolts. What kind of case am I looking at here? It's not. The question is, who's behind it? So the what we have is not difficult. We have an abduction for ransom. The FBI says it. The clues tell us that. We saw this family begging. And again, I don't know what FBI experts are saying. They're lying. They're not lying. They're just not. That just is not what we do. We shut up. We don't lie. It's a kidnap for ransom. And everybody is fine to have a different view. I'm telling you what this is. This is what it is. It's a kidnap for ransom. Who did it? That is the question. That first note is like a wrench attack note. I am telling you. And I know the experts that are worth $2 billion company has said it's a wrench attack by proxy, meaning they're not trying to beat it out of Nancy. They're trying to use Nancy to get to Savannah's money. That first note is so much a wrench attack note. It's the second note now after that came out that has me really confused, because that note adds this personal nature to it, as if, and even the first note has a personal nature, as if they did have some connection. You know, as if they did have some connection. Holding for 7 days. They're all no nonsense. Again, we're talking about the first note, because the second note we talked about before. Once the payment occurs, we're going to drop her back off in Tulsa. So they're not in Tulsa, but they seem to know Tulsa, right? They went to Tulsa Radio, or Tulsa, Tucson. They seem to know Tucson. They seem to know Tucson radio stations. We're going to drop her back at Tucson as if they're very familiar, in a safe place back in Tucson. Her life is in your hands. It's all very familiar. It's not all black and white. It's black and white with a lot of massaging. Hello, Savannah. We have your mom. Her life is in your hands. I mean, geez. Very personal. Why didn't they send proof of life? The only thing I can think is, again, their concern for being caught, which also doesn't make me understand why they sent the apology note. One ransom note, in my opinion, one apology note. They're connected through their IP addresses, apparently. The specificity about if we don't get the money, then the money goes up to 6,000 from 4. And if we don't get that, she's going to die and you're not going to hear from us again. Well, they went back on that, didn't they? Because they came out and did the apology note, which I think was self-serving, because if they do get caught, they're going to say, we didn't mean for her to die. See, look at that note we wrote. We see this all the time, these self-serving comments and things that are made by criminals, fearful they're going to get caught and wanting to put that out there. Yeah, Kelly, I tell you, your mother. The reason you use language like this is to pull at Savannah, using her first name, pulling at her, using at her, your mother. Pulling at Savannah, making this decision on Savannah, that the mom, that they have told Nancy the rules of this, that they know they're going to put it out there, and that she knows that. That is really the biggest one, right? Knowing that your mom has been told this by the kidnappers. We're going to put it out and we're going to put it in Savannah's hands. Let's see if Savannah comes up with the money. And Savannah did not make the decision to pay. And again, I think it was because of the Bureau indicating no proof of life. You know, life is in your hand. No negotiation. Law enforcement cannot help you. Everyone, I just wanted to talk about that first note, since now we have more details, and give you kind of a couple of the other things, just my philosophy on it. Again, it's not saying anything negative against, I mean, talking about these different things. I will never bash or go against a fellow agent. But I just ask you to really look at people's backgrounds, what they really did in the FBI, the amount of time, how many people have had a kidnapping case, how many people were violent crime. All of that just talks about time behind the tiller. And when you have time behind the tiller, you make mistakes, you go down the wrong roads, you make a lot of errors. And the point is, do you learn from each one? That's what I would always say. I'd say, well, I can't learn anything from something I already knew. But with each case, you learn so much. Actually, right? Every day we learn so much. You guys, I am going to let you go. I really appreciate y'all being on, especially with the late notice. Y'all are amazing. The mods, no better mods in the business. I think you all would agree. And no better chat around. I just love the chat. I welcome differing opinions on different cases, especially when they're discussed and you guys can point something out maybe that I haven't looked at or thought about, or maybe with a point you make, I can have a counterpoint. But this case will continue to be the number one case we follow on this channel. Obviously, when cases like a Nolan Wells case comes up, the Ohio 16 kids, the Cider kids, something like that comes up, obviously I'm going to do a show on that. But this is our main case. You will always have a place to go where you're going to get all the information that is out there, and we're going to dissect it and talk about facts. All right, everyone. Y'all are amazing. Until the next time, may justice be served for Nancy Guthrie and for all the families of the missing.